greatest country in the world?
Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying
yes.
You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey,
and with a straight face.
Once Hope Radio.
So star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom.
Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom.
So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And you got you, sorority girl. Just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you, nonetheless, are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Sure used to be. You stood up for what was right. Fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chests. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured disease early, cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars. Acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't care so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step to solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?
Alrighty, welcome to another edition of A Muslim and a Catholic Wake Up in America. I'm your host, Issa.
And I'm your co-host, Common Cal.
That's right. And today I'm like giddy like a schoolgirl. I've like giggled several times today. Every time I thought about
I noticed you did go change and put in your nice polyester leisure suit there.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're ready for Boca already, aren't you?
I am ready for Boca. I am. But tonight, I am so excited. We have Jill Stein, Dr. Jill Stein on the show tonight with us. We are currently trying to connect with her. She's waiting on some technical things to get worked out. So yes, we are working on getting contacted with Jill Stein. I am just, you know, Cal, you know, we've worked really hard on this show.
We're moving on up.
We are. We have definitely moved up here.
To the east side.
To the east side.
Beans don't burn on the grill.
That's right, they don't. We slowly cook them now. So while we work on that...
You're George, by the way.
Say that again?
You're George, by the way.
That's okay. I could do the whole George Dash. You could be Wheezy. So...
I don't want to know where that connotation takes us.
That's actually kind of...
Yeah.
All right. You want to tell our listeners about that while I get us connected with Jill?
Tell us about what?
The bio. You want to read her bio there?
You want to do a little.
Want to do a little work today?
I'm not up for that. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's do something, would you?
Oh, Jill Stein. She is a Green Party candidate for presidential hopeful. So. She has, actually on her blog, or not, I wouldn't call it blog, website, Jill's 2016 plan, Power to the People plan. My Power to the People plan creates deep system change, moving from the greed and exploitation of corporate capitalism to a human-centered economy that puts people, planet, and peace over profit. It offers direct answers to the economic, social, and ecological crisis brought on by both corporate political parties, and it empowers the American people to fix our broken political system and may make real the promise of democracy. This plan will end unemployment and poverty.
Hey, I apologize to interrupt there, but I think you will need to make this phone call. I put the number in our chat there. I am not able to do it on my end, and I'll take over from there if you don't mind, Cal. Because I'm trying to get Loki to do it, and
that's Loki's Bobby Rodrigo.
Not doing his job.
That's Bobby Rodrigo's number.
No, it's not.
It says Bobby Rodrigo right on it.
That's because that's where I got the number from. Just call it. All right. So anyway, so Jill Stein is the Green Party 2012 candidate for president of the United States. She's also the Green Party's candidate for 2016. She's the organizer, physician, and pioneer environmental health advocate. She has led initiatives promoting health communities, local green economies, and the revitalization of democracy, addressing issues such as campaign finance reform, green jobs, racially just redistricting, and cleanup of incinerators, coal plants, and toxics. She was a principal organizer for the Global Climate Convergence for People, Planet, Peace Over Profit. Where are we at with contacting her?
Look on your screen.
Alrighty, here we go. And we got one ring-a-ding.
Two
ring-a-dingies.
Okay, stand by, Jill. Hi, this is Jill. Who's this?
Hi, Jill. This is Issa and Cal with a Muslim and a Catholic Wake Up in America. I want to thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. Are we on air now?
We are live. We are live.
We are live.
Yes.
Okay.
Is this the party to whom I'm speaking?
Yes.
All right, great. Well, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Now, before we couldn't get on here, I just was telling our listeners that I've been like giddy as a schoolgirl all day today. I've been running around telling my patients and my coworkers and everything. I'm like, I get Jill Stein on the show tonight. Just giddy like a schoolgirl. I've been very excited. Cal has barely been able to hold me back here because I've just been so excited.
Hold on. Let's clarify. It's not like I even tried. You want to make a fool of yourself? Sir, I have given you the floor. Make a fool.
So tonight, with our guests, we always like to play games with our guests. We like to have a good time with our guests. We have very serious conversations and very factual conversations, but we like to have fun with our guests because we like our guests to come back. Right?
Sounds good to me. Well,
yeah, game. All right. So the game for tonight is, Jill, a presidential hopeful, I'm hoping actually, is that you must convince a Muslim and a Catholic to vote for you come 2016.
Okay? Sounds to me like Issa's already biased on this.
So. I'm already. I mean, you don't really have to do too much.
There's no convincing on the Muslim part of things.
Really, I think this is a piece of cake. Totally.
Oh, it's going to be easy. Okay, good.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. She does
really,
not know
I think
of
for
me.
For a Muslim and a Catholic, for anybody who really has the future of humanity at heart, I think, we got to go forward together. And, the corruption of the system, as we know it, well, look at what the Pope has to say about it,
Yeah.
I think our campaign
Oh, no, you did. You did not bring my Pope into this.
Yes, we are actually big fans of the Pope. The man is actually speaking sense now.
He is. is. I don't think we have to bring the Pope into this. The Pope is already here. And, you know, and I think the Pope is speaking for not just humanity, but the creatures of the planet right now.
You
know, we have no choice going forward except to do this, you know, building a world that works for all of us. Right now, we have a world that works for the 1%.
Yeah.
And if it's going to work for us, we need to move them out of the way because they're not going to be talked into it. You know,
right.
This is about using the power and the wisdom and the vision and the love that we have that corporate America and the two parties that represent them does not have and will never have. So this is about, you know, we say this is about rejecting the lesser evil and standing up for the greater good. It's up to us. No one else is going to do it.
Well, I think that every time we break boundaries, we break these labels that they put upon us, whether it's me as a Muslim or Cal as a Catholic, and if I'm not mistaken, you're Jewish. You're of the Jewish faith, correct?
That's right. By upbringing, I live in a mixed household now, I will say, but...
Right.
Wait.
So you have three people that the corporate, the 1%, wants to believe that we all hate each other.
Hold on.
Exactly.
She's Jewish. She's Jewish?
And that is of their game.
That's right.
Is to play this game of divide and conquer.
That's correct.
But the secret is, the minute we reach our hands out, you know, to each other, this vast, great mass of humanity, which is being thrown under the bus and over the cliff right now, we're actually in free fall, whether you're looking at our education system, whether you're looking at student debt, the skyrocketing costs of health care, even under Obamacare or Romney Care or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are being thrown under the bus. The minute we get together, we have the numbers that we are absolutely unstoppable. One out of two Americans is now in poverty or low income, heading for poverty. 40 million millennials are in debt without an option for getting out of debt, considering that the jobs being created now since the meltdown are almost entirely low-wage, temporary, part-time jobs. So young people are indentured servants without a way forward. You add those numbers, and that's 40 million people. You add one in three African Americans, men, who are basically held hostage by the prison state and the drug wars and this police militarization that's especially focused on communities of color. You know, this is not just a plurality. This is an outright majority. Mm-hmm. And if word gets out simply to young people that they have the opportunity to come out in 2016 and check the green box, which means end debt, to end and abolish student debt, if word gets out that that's the case, and it'll be hard to stop that word because it's going to spread like a wildfire, that all bets are off. 40 million people is enough to actually win a three-way race.
That's right.
So we have enough, we have enormous power. We have the power of our vision, of a plan, of a blueprint, and we do have the numbers. And, you know, in the words of Alice Walker, the biggest way people give up power is by not knowing we have it to start with. And that's the reality. We do have the power. They tried to talk us out of that power. They have succeeded for a while now, but I think this is the wake-up moment. This is the ultimate wake-up moment.
Well, I think we're at a threshold, I think, where we have no choice but to wake up because the earth is no longer going to wait for us. The financial markets are going to no longer wait for us. And future generations, as far as our education or the lack thereof, I mean, we are no longer inventing. We are no longer creating. You know, we are just consuming. Now, my co-host is biting at the bit right now. I mean, I can literally see him. He's chewing on his knuckles. He has something he has to ask you right now. And if I don't stop talking, he's probably going to hurt me. So I'm going to stop talking so that he can ask you a question.
Mrs. Stein.
I'll do the same.
being that you are Jewish, could I please have Mel Brooks' phone number?
So he can have a little chat with him.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? You know, I mean, they tell us we're supposed to be a clan, you know, like a tribe.
Yeah.
But somehow I haven't gotten the phone numbers that really count.
No, wait a minute. How does that work?
When you get it,
I'm Catholic. I'm Catholic. I have the Pope's number.
Yeah, and apparently I have Al Qaeda's number. I don't know where it's at, but
we have called the Vatican.
Al-Qaeda's number.
We have called the Vatican from our show before.
Yeah, we have. We have called the Vatican from here. So
have you really? Oh,
yeah, we have. They have. They have. Yes, yes. We are not afraid to call anybody. We will have a conversation with anybody. But that brings us, now that we're talking about foreign affairs, because to be honest with you, you know, I am a conservative personally. I'm a conservative person for my personal life, but I do not believe in infringing my conservativeness onto others. I am a bit more of a libertarian than that. So with that being in mind, I have actually read your domestic policy. I'm actually quite happy with your domestic policy. I'm all about ending the Fed. I'm all about accountability with our politicians. I'm all about these laws being, you know, subject to the politicians themselves. And I believe you're also an advocate for term limits for senators and congressmen, and getting rid of corporate and all that. So I'm good with that, which I want you to go into a little bit of details a little bit. But for me, the last hitch for me, and I'm talking about, I'm really going to go all out particularly within the Muslim community. I'm talking about 7 to 10 million Muslims in this country that where the per capita the number one law abiding. We are $9 billion a year industry in this country. We are the highest educated in this per capita country.
Did you just say that a religion was
Muslims? No, right. Islam is the religion. Wait. Muslims are the people who follow it.
Right, but you say they're $9 billion a year industry.
That's right. We produce about $9 billion a year in this country.
So you're saying your religion is an industry. I just caught.
I don't know where you're getting that. But anyways,
we're not corporate.
We're individual LLCs. Okay,
that's what we are. Gotcha.
Little small LLCs. Okay. That produce $9 billion collectively. All right. All right. So my question is this: is because I have looked far and wide about your foreign policy, because to me, the foreign policy is huge. $90 billion a year in military aid to 150 different countries is ridiculous. I think economic aid is important, but military aid isn't. I mean, 67% of our own taxes go towards military. So I want to know from you, particularly since the occupation within Palestine is a big deal to me. I'm an advocate for a two-party state, but I'm also an advocate for no violence on both state side. Okay, I'm an advocate for that, but I'm also a realist, and I know who the bigger bully of the two is. So I want to know yours. Please. I want to know your policy, your foreign policy, particularly with military aid. And also I'd like you to touch a little bit on your opinion of the Israeli-Palestinian occupation.
Oh, great. All right. Love to talk about it all, you know, especially today with the treaty being completed with Iran to lift the sanctions on Iran and, you know, to have a system of inspections to basically confirm what Iran and international authorities and the International Atomic Energy Association has been saying forever, which is that Iran, you know, Iran doesn't have a bomb any more than Iraq had weapons of mass destruction.
Oh.
And Iran has not been planning to build a bomb either. Iran has a nuclear power system, which is sort of unfortunate because the real way to go here is completely eliminate the threat of nuclear weapons by abandoning nuclear power. That's the only real way that, you know, that we stop the spread of nuclear weapons. And the cheapest form of energy in the Middle East is actually solar energy now, not nuclear. Mm. So, you know, it would be nice to actually take that treaty where it ought to go, which is no nukes, no nuclear power, and no nukes for everybody. How about the other nuclear threats to the Middle East, like namely Israel? And you can include in that Pakistan and India, for that matter.
Yes, you
and
can.
Saudi Arabia,
and
you know,
Saudi.
Is going to be far behind. So it's just, you know, it's really unfortunate that so much effort has been put only into Iran here when the whole problem really should be and could be eradicated. So, you know, that's one comment for starters. But to the larger question of foreign policy, you know, I think what you're alluding to is absolutely right, that we have a foreign policy which is based on total military and economic domination around the world. You know, not only with a with a military budget that actually comes to $1 trillion a year when you add in all the other budgets in addition to the Defense Department, where billions and hundreds of billions of dollars are being stashed, including nuclear weapons, for example, which isn't even in the military budget. So, you know, it's $1 trillion a year that we've spent. Mm-hmm. It's approximately $5 trillion that we have spent over the past decade making an utter disaster zone out of the Middle East, creating more violence, pouring gasoline on the fire, arming every warlord that we were able to fool ourselves into thinking was on our side in every country imaginable, and by committing essentially, you know, massive human rights atrocities through this this drone weapons program, which has done more damage to U.S. standing in the eyes of the world and has done more to actually radicalize the Middle East and the populations of the Middle East than any terrorists have been able to win over. We've been basically pushing people into that camp. And this is well documented in Yemen and in Pakistan, where studies have shown that this extremely violent and destructive policy of drone attacks, which hit largely civilians, you know, and wedding parties and funerals and things like that, that this has been the most destructive thing imaginable. So the bottom line here is that this policy of sort of shoot first as a matter of foreign policy has been massively destructive. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, we need to move from this policy to a foreign policy based on international law, human rights, and diplomacy, of which this latest treaty in Iran is really a good example. There were many who said there's no alternative but to start bombing Iran, and we proved them, you know, how absolutely false that kind of policy is. And
though Obama actually did do it, I mean, Obama has done it three times. I mean, he did it by, he did it in Libya, he did it in Syria, mm-hmm. and he's done it exactly. in Iraq again. I mean, Bush did it as well. But here's the issue though. It seems like to me that it's not just corporate America. I mean, corporates that are leading our politicians into these wars, because of course we know death makes more money than peace. Okay, hate is more profitable than love. We know that. You can still profit in love. We know that, but it's more profitable with hate. So. The issue what I find, particularly when it deals with the Middle East, it always tends to be at Israel's bequest. I mean, especially with Netanyahu. I mean, he's been on his rampage with Iran. And just as bad as we think that the leaders in Saudi, particularly in Yemen, and as bad as we think Assad may be, and as bad as Gaddafi may have been, and as bad as Saddam Hussein could have been, I mean, they were all warmongers, hate mongers. But our government is right now, as well as Netanyahu. Would you agree with that? I mean, they're just warmongers.
Yes, I mean, I certainly agree. The Netanyahu government in Israel is, you know, they have committed war crimes in no uncertain terms. And the occupation of Palestine is absolutely illegal and should be reversed. The massacre in Gaza was a war crime. When you are killing about 100 times the number of people, you know, in Gaza and in Palestine as were killed by Israelis, I mean, any deaths are right. You know, are wrong.
Exactly.
But international law also recognizes that disproportionate deaths are amount to a war crime, mm-hmm. and there's not. You know, there's not equity here among, you know, among human rights violations when you're talking about, you know, a handful of people who were killed in that massacre compared to many thousands of people, which were largely civilians that were killed on the Palestinian side, where it was largely Israeli soldiers. Not to mention that the missiles that were launched by Palestine, which are more like sort of high school science projects as opposed to, you know, very destructive missiles, they're still problematic, but those were provoked by massive roundups and mm-hmm. you know, extremely violent incursions into Palestine. So there is, you know, I think there is no, absolutely no justification whatsoever for the extremely belligerent and militaristic policy of the Israelis. And, you know, it's no surprise that Netanyahu's biggest funder is an American in the form of Sheldon Adelson, who pours more money than anyone into Netanyahu's whole public relations support.
Yeah, they just met up. They just met up here recently. They had some big function out in L.A. where, I mean, several heavyweight actors were there. Keanu Reeves was there. Kate Hudson was there. I was actually just out. One last thing, because Cal's handling the questions of the domestic stuff, although I think I have like one or two on the domestic, but he has a question, but I just have one follow-up question on this. My suggestion has always been, as far as dealing with Israel, is that I think that we give Palestine a better chance if we're not given it's anywhere between $4.3 and $4.7 billion a year to Israel. If we're not actually funding them with our tax dollars, force Israel to the table to negotiate close to the 1967 borders or somewhere around there and force them to create a two-party state. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why we're calling for an entirely different foreign policy in which we are not in the business of funding war criminals and human rights violators, period. And that applies to Israel. It applies to Saudi Arabia.
Right.
It applies to Egypt. This needs to be applied across the board. It's not just Israel that is a human rights violator.
That's right.
But Israel is particularly egregious because we are the main funder, and we are spending $8 million every day, $8 million a day funding the Israeli military.
Well, arguably,
so this is a real problem.
Arguably, we could add Saudi and Egypt as well as huge human rights violators as well. Even though we don't fund them that much, the fact that we, you know, buy a good portion of our oil from Saudi, the fact that we hide, you know, their transgressions, their violations of human rights. I mean, I think that's egregious as well. And I think that our government is complicit in this.
And that's why we're calling for an even-handed policy of not funding human rights violators. Furthermore, we need to rein in the weapons industry because we are the biggest, you know, in Martin Luther King's words, we are the biggest purveyor of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And the underpinnings of that is that we are the biggest profiteer of the weapons of war, which we scatter all around the world. And it's no surprise, you know, with all the weapons pouring into the Middle East, that things are as explosive and dangerous as they are. So, for example, take the problem of ISIS. The case is made that by the powers that be that this is why we have to rev up, you know, a whole new cycle of war in the Middle East and in Iraq because of ISIS. Well, it just so happens that ISIS was a product of that war, of the incredible devastation of civil society that's created when you arm warlords and you just send them at each other's throats. So, you know, from the get-go, it should be clear that we don't fix the ISIS problem by doing more of what created it. But beyond that, there are three things that are empowering ISIS. So one is international finance and the flow of dollars. Another is the flow of militias across borders. And thirdly, weapons. And fourth is it's the oil on the black market, which our allies are buying, including Iraq and Turkey and so on. So these are our allies, and it's our weapons that are flowing in and being abandoned on the battlefield and being picked up by them or are being directly, you know, sent to them. So we can basically starve ISIS. Bombing ISIS, you can be sure we're going to bomb everybody and just make more of a mess of the situation.
Yeah.
So we can starve ISIS. There are ways to do this. At the end of the day, as you were saying earlier, you know, hate is more profitable. Well, the problem is we cannot have a world that's driven strictly by profit because profit and, I wouldn't say hate, but profit and indifference to human rights and human welfare and basic human and family values, that's not consistent with profit. And what happens in the kind of economy and society that we have right now, which is essentially run by profiteers and, you know, by the 1% who sponsors our political system. So our political system is essentially held hostage by those who are, you know, for whom greed and profit wins the day. And this is destroying humanity. It is destroying the environment. It's destroying our economy, our communities, our school system, our healthcare system, you name it. There is nothing left of the common good if they have their way. And there will be nothing left for them either, but they're sort of too blind to see that. So, you know, we need to be in the business of creating a society that actually works for us, not for the 1%. It's not rocket science how to do that. And what I find so hopeful is that we don't have to persuade people. People have been persuaded by history. And when people are actually given a choice, they can smell a rat, and they know who's not a rat. And given knowledge of who their choices are and the ability to vote for them, the right thing is going to happen. This became unbelievably clear to me in the first televised debate that I participated in 2002, running for governor here in Massachusetts, where we basically agitated our way into the debate, and I had been sort of recruited to run. It was my first run. And inside that TV studio, said all the things that are reflected by, you know, basic polling back then and even now, mm-hmm. that people want, you know, a peaceful world. People want to downsize the military. They want to spend our dollars here at home creating true security. They want health care as a human right. They want education as a human right, and so on. They want to respect the rights of immigrants.
Yeah, but they want all those. Like that. Jill, I'm sorry, but they want all of those. The majority of Americans want all those until...
Believe it or not, yes.
No. Until something happens, though. And this is this is where we find ourselves in the activist community, like Cal and I are in. This is where we find ourselves so frustrated, beat our heads against the wall, is they want all of that stuff until either, a real attack happens from whatever boogeyman is being sold, or even a false flag attack happens.
Sure.
Because
sure,
they both happen. Both false flags fear, in order to,
Fear is a very powerful thing, especially when you can't hear the counter argument. And right now we are locked out so that people are sort of terrorized by these fear campaigns and they don't have an opportunity to hear the way things are. But even in the absence of a fear campaign, we can't move forward because people are systematically denied a knowledge of their choices. And what happened in this debate, I want you to know, is that inside the TV studio, those ideas were treated like the lunatic fringe, and they went over like lead balloons. But the minute we walked out of the debate into the area where the press was waiting, I was mobbed by the press who told me that I had won the debate on the Instant Online Viewer poll. At that point, they shut down Instant Online Viewer polls in TV debates, and they took me out of the debate. So to me, that made the point. We just need to get to the microphone. And this happens all the time when Greens have a chance to actually be heard in debates. We win all the time, and it's not because we're Green. It's because we are the only party that's not bought out for corporate money.
Just say it. You're not bought out. You haven't sold your soul for a jelly roll.
So no lobbyists?
Exactly. So there's no rocket science here. This is basically about our getting to be heard and about the American public just not being bullied and brutalized anymore into thinking that we're powerless. We are not powerless. We are powerful. And the minute we get together, we are absolutely unstoppable. Yeah, to tell you the truth, I feel really hopeful because we are in such a wake-up moment right now. As you were saying, this is a transformative moment because we are, you know, 1 foot into the abyss right now. Yeah. You know, we are in a free fall, and it falls to us now to actually speak up, to stand up, and to take back, you know, the system, our democracy, and the policies that we deserve, which are actually within our reach right now. No reason why we can't have a full employment economy with living wages, where people are busy building a green economy, dismantling the war economy, and creating 100% clean renewable energy by the year 2030, and meeting human needs in the process, and creating a healthy food system and public transportation. And we will save so much money in the process that this actually pays for itself.
Jill, I have a question for you. And I want to preface my question here to understand. I worry more about domestic things because You have to fix your house before you can go fix somebody else's, is what I believe. Now, reading through your website, you know, I really like your new green New Deal. I think that is a wonderful idea. I actually, in my business, am really huge into recycling. I own an automotive. I'm an automotive repair industry, and I'm trying to build a shop that is hopefully the future, where we, you know, solar power, recycling plastics, recycling absolutely everything we possibly can, just to show that this business is not as dirty as most other people. But with my questioning for you, I'm gonna kind of have to play devil's advocate for you. Because I do love the Green New Deal, but at the same time, I also noticed that you kind of lean towards there not being a Fed, really. So, my question, shut up, Isa.
Sorry.
We already know where he stands. I'm undecided, so I guess now the game is convince a Catholic.
And this was, you said about the Fed, the Federal Reserve?
Well,
getting
kind of diverting towards getting rid of the Fed. But my question actually goes with, if we get rid of the Fed, who pays for the Green New Deal?
Okay, so let me answer those questions independently, because it actually doesn't take the Fed to pay for the Green New Deal, and we'll come back to that, because that really, I think, that's really the important question. About the Fed, I think the main point about the Fed is that, you know, and the Fed sort of sets monetary policy. The point is that the Fed is controlled right now by private banks, by very big private banks who are making out like bandits. And so, you know, we have to have some kind of monetary policy. That's true.
Yes.
But it should be set in the public interest, not by this little cabal of private bankers that, you know, are doing very well, thank you, and what would like to keep things exactly as they are. So our point is mostly that we need to make the Fed an institution that's transparent and which is accountable to the public. Right now, it's only accountable to the big bankers who run it. So that seems like it's a pretty common sense basic idea that most people support the minute they learn that the Fed is a private for-profit entity, basically run by for-profit banks.
Right.
So I think, you know, I think that's not going to be a hard sell at all. The other question you ask is, I think, really critical. How do we pay for this massive economic transition?
Right.
You know, to a green economy that allows us to survive without destroying the climate and our water supply.
Are we going back to taxing the small business people and not the corporates? Yeah, because we built this country.
We want to tax small people less, a whole lot less. And small people are being taxed because the big guys
are gonna faint. Wait a minute. Did I just hear a politician say helping out small business? Wait a minute. Hold on.
Cal, sit down.
For sure. If you look at our Green New Deal, first let me say, what we know from studying this, and there are very good studies and also some real-world examples I can tell you about, but when you change over to green energy, you know what happens? For one thing, you don't need the wars for oil anymore. Isn't that nice?
Oh, yes, I know.
You can cut the military budget, and that's where a lot of the money comes from. But another thing is that, guess what? When you don't have polluted air and you have a food system which is more sustainable, local, organic, and it doesn't rely on fossil fuels, et cetera, which is part of the fossil fuel system, when you have a sustainable food system, people get a whole lot healthier.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a transportation system that actually protects our right to be able to walk and bicycle, you know, to have safe transportation modes that get us to public transit hubs, which is how you want to be able to get your exercise. You don't want to have to buy a $1,000 prescription to join some health club, you know, and then buy a car so you can go drive to your health club. You know, you want to have activity built into daily life. This is how, you know, this is how societies get healthy, when activity is just built into how you get around. So it turns out when you have a green economy with a healthy local food system, with green and active forms of transportation, and with clean energy, so you're not polluting the air and the water, it turns out you save so much money just from sicknesses that don't happen. But that itself is enough to pay for the costs of the energy transition. Very few people know that. We sort of assume that air pollution is God-given. You know, well, it turns out it's not at all. And there are about 7 million deaths every year. Air pollution is actually like one of the biggest killers worldwide of anything. So
yeah, and everybody blames my business.
What's that?
I said, and everybody blames my business. You know, it's the cars polluting the world. No, no, it's not the cars polluting the world. It's people not taking care of theirs.
It's the people that's in my business. It's the people in my business that pollute. It's all the patients. I own a clinic, so it's all of them. That's who's doing it.
Okay,
it's all of them.
Jill,
the bottom line is that we can fix it. We can fix it in a way that pays for itself. And just remember this. After Pearl Harbor was bombed at the outset of the Second World War, it took us 6 months to go from a peace economy to a war economy. We're still in that war economy.
Well, it's because you had enough people.
Remember that. It took 6 months.
That's
so
it.
We can do this. We can actually do this the minute we recognize that the climate is every bit as much of an emergency as the Second World War. In fact, way more of an emergency because it's one that we don't recover from. And not only that, but doing what's right for the climate is also what's right for our health, and it's what's right for our economy, and it ensures that everybody has a job right now, making our communities healthier and safer, and a much more livable place for us and future generations. So this
Agreed.
Is a win-win-win.
Now,
and in short, that's the short answer to we can afford to do this and we cannot afford not to do it.
Well, also, you forgot your $90 billion that we're not going to be given in military aid. That comes back to the economy.
There you go.
So there we go.
Okay, now next question.
Military aid and also the wars that we fight, you know, this trillion-dollar budget that we have maintaining 700 military bases around the world so that we can continue to get energy wherever, energy and scarce resources from wherever we need it. And once you have secure energy, which is domestic, then the bottom really drops out. You don't need those friggin' wars for oil anymore.
No more friggin' wars for oil.
I've got a big controversial question for you, Jill.
Sure.
Uh-oh.
Okay, because you want to set a $15 an hour federal minimum wage. Now, there's many thoughts on this. And I will tell you right up front, being a business owner, I know what this incurs for me. I pay a pretty decent wage. Most of my mechanics and body men are commission-based. But as far as like my shop grunts and stuff like that, they don't make $15 an hour, but they do make well more than minimum wage that has already been raised. Now, if we go to a $15 an hour minimum wage, this in effect causes me to have to raise my pricing to my customers. Or my other option is to lower the amount of employees I have because I have a certain amount of income that I have to be able to pay my employees. So to me, on my side, it is a vicious circle. Everybody wants to raise the minimum wage, but in reality, all that does is actually end up causing a raise of cost of living. Because, you know, if the farmer has to pay more for his help, he has to charge more for milk. It's plain and simple. So how do you plan to offset to be able to raise the $15 an hour minimum wage without me having to fire employees or raise my prices?
Great questions. And what, you know, there are two main things here that settle the issue for me, because, you know, I realize there's going to be a squeeze here, particularly for very small businesses. But the deal is that when the minimum wage goes up for everybody, everybody's purchasing power goes way up, and it's like a big shot in the arm to the economy. And most economists agree, and historic analysis and stuff like that shows that when you raise the minimum wage, you also boost the economy so much that it makes up for that extra strain, that you have more people who are able to bring their cars in and get them fixed. So you have more business. You have more people who are able to actually buy cars and afford the transportation. So that there is a downside, but there's also a big upside, too. The other piece of it is that if you look over what's happened since the 1960s, what's happened is that the cost of living has gone way up, and worker productivity has also gone way up.
Well, that could be argued that
wages have stagnated.
Oh, wages
so that
have gone up.
If you actually corrected now, if you corrected current wages for what people would be getting if they were being paid at like 1968 levels, it would be well over $15 an hour. It would be way more. So the point is that by letting workers fall back on their wages, we have allowed this incredible income disparity to take place. And that's created this incredibly unequal society, which is an unfair society, and then it becomes an undemocratic society as well when the money and the resources are concentrated into fewer hands. So the bottom line is just that we badly need to fix this, and we need to fix it for historical reasons as well as for just plain reasons of justice. And the history of this really puts it in perspective that this is just something we have to do in order to create the sort of just and secure and flourishing economy that we deserve.
Okay, well, what about the corporations that use these kind of things, like the corporations that have added on, well, hey, I'll just, my trash collectors. You know, used to be, I didn't pay a gas charge until gas prices went up. Then they add on a gas surcharge to my bill. You know, this, it's the repetitiveness. If something goes up in price, then either people are going to want to get paid more, then if people get paid more, then it costs more to produce, which then in turn, the price of the product goes up. What are you planning to do to stop these companies that will do this kind of thing, like my trash company did?
Yes. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's a big problem, you know, pointing to the role of corporations. And corporations are, you know, it's not just that they raise prices, but it's that they pay their workers less, you know.
Right,
and
or
their
get
profit
rid of workers.
Their profit margins get bigger all the time. So, you know, we give charters to corporations. Corporations are chartered at the national level. And this has been true throughout the history of the country. From the very beginning, corporations were given charters to serve a public purpose. And from the very beginning, when the country was founded, because corporations played a big role in the oppression of the of the original settlers, because many of the settlements were corporate enterprises. And in overthrowing the aristocracy, we also overthrew corporations. And corporations were not legal entities here for a long time because they made such a mess out of the beginnings of our country, and people had to overthrow them. So it was recognized that corporations accumulate enormous amounts of wealth that get abused and that begin to exploit people and economies. So we created a setup at the very start that said, if you want to have a license to be a corporation, you are given permission to do that by we the public for a specific public purpose for a limited period of time. And corporations had an automatic expiration date. In some states it was 10 years, in some states it was more or less. But the point is that corporations need to serve a public purpose. And in my home state, for example, in Massachusetts, we actually have charters for them which can be revoked and should be revoked when they are abusing their public purpose.
So are you for arresting?
Go
ahead, finish your last point there.
But last point real quickly is that there are other ways to meet public needs. There are also, cooperative adventures and cooperative ventures, which can be community-based. They can also be worker-owned. They don't, they're rule, and they have generally boards which represent workers and the community, not just investors. When you have economic enterprises that are strictly run by investors, then you get decisions that can be very harmful to workers, to the community, and to the environment. But when you have a different business model, that of a cooperation, then you have a whole different, it's a whole different ballgame. And I think it's really important. This is partly what's worked into the Green New Deal, is a different system. And this is partly what our campaign is about, is moving from an economy where profit rules people, profit rules the planet, and profit rules peace. And it destroys all of them for the biggest buck. There's another way to have an economy here, which is a cooperative economy. Sometimes it's called economic democracy, where actually people decide what kind of economy we have. People decide how we run our enterprises. And so there are many things built into the Green New Deal
We can also go back to the fur trapping and barter system. That wouldn't be a bad idea either.
say that again. Barter and what else?
And fur trapping. We can go ahead and go back to fur trapping.
Fur trapping.
Yeah, sorry about that. So I just wanted to give, we're going to give a shout out to our syndicated listeners. We have them with the Coffee Party USA, as well as JREV, that's Journalistic Revolution Radio, and LMR, Liberty Movement Radio, as well as our website, Wake Up in America. That's not, we're not living in America anymore, people. We live in America. But hopefully, with people like Jill Stein, we might get back to America. But right now, we are Waking Up in America. WakeUpInAmerica.com. This is where you can listen to us live. Jill, we have our show. There's other questions we have. I know that we have limited time, but we pride ourselves in letting our listeners be able to question our guests. If you're up for that, we have a caller that our producer, Loki, has screened to make sure he's not a nut job like me and Cal.
Speak for myself, sir.
All right, there you go. Loki, want to bring them in for us?
Sure.
All right, caller, you're on with Loki and Cal and our guest, our esteemed guest, Jill Stein. You have a question for her.
Hello, caller.
Hello, Clarice.
Hello, am I the caller?
There you go. You are the caller.
Identify yourself, caller. Oh, hey.
Hey, it's Robert.
How are you?
I'm good. How's the weather in Canada?
it's very nice. Can you hear me all right?
We can hear you. Go ahead and ask your question for Jill.
Yes, I do. And I want to go back to something about foreign policy. I have been very pleased and excited about everything I've heard. But as Cal needs to know, Israeli occupation of Palestine is an area of great interest and concern of mine. So I wanted to ask, Jill, I heard Issa said something about negotiations. What do you think is the solution? This is a big question. What is the solution to the Israeli occupation of Palestine? If that's too broad, I could kind of bring it down a little bit.
Great. No, I think that's a great question. Shall I jump in?
Please.
I'm ready to go on that. I thought, great. Yeah, you know, I think the occupation of Palestine needs to be ended, basically. You know, in so many words, that's the solution. The occupation needs to be removed, actually. And, you know, I think there is... when you have two sides that have been so, enmeshed in war, repeated war, for a long, long time, it's quite a challenge to, to stop it and to move forward and to build trust and to sort of develop a future of peaceful coexistence. I think it's very important to point out that there are grassroots human rights groups on the ground that have been doing this, that have been supporting Palestinian human rights and peace, both on the part of Israelis and Palestinians. Mm-hmm. There are joint groups, Jewish and Muslim, Israeli and Palestinian. These groups are flourishing on the ground. And they need to be empowered to lead the way because they have the credibility and the experience. You know, there are many Israeli, former Israeli soldiers even, who have become adamant opponents to occupation and to war, and who are strong advocates for Palestinian human rights. So there are groups on the ground who should be leading this effort and who need to be supported and who need to be a part of this very difficult work. What, is it a one state? Is it a two state? Is a two state even possible now, given the, you know, the incursions into Palestinian territory? These are very complicated questions, and I think we need to empower the people on the ground who have already done the hard work of building trust, building confidence, and making friends under the most incredibly difficult and horrific circumstances. They have made peace and friends with each other. We need to lift them up and build that friendship and let that lead the way forward.
Oh, thank you.
And above all, that means stopping U.S. support for, Obama does protest the occupation, but he continues funding $8 million a day for the Israeli military. So we need to put our money where our mouth is here and insist on the preeminence, on respect for human rights and international law. And it's very clear what international law says needs to be done here.
It's interesting that you say that. And we are talking to Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate for president, 2016. She is, fervently working here to convince a Muslim and a Catholic to vote for her.
Okay, then I have more. I have another question.
Well, we're going to get to that, but we got to pay a bill.
No, we don't. We pay the bills.
Okay, all right. We don't have to pay a bill. All right, so go ahead.
In fact, we just wrote the check today.
Yes.
Okay, here's the ad. Issa and Cal pay for their show. There, commercials are done. Jill.
And can I just mention, just if people want to be a part of this, you know, a part of making peace in the Middle East, about disarming not only nuclear weapons, but nuclear power plants, too, which are basically nuclear weapons located strategically near population centers, they can join the team by going to jill2016.com.
Yep.
And sign up and get the newsletter and, you know, and join us on Facebook and, you know, share, repost, forward, et cetera.
Yeah, we have
the numbers to do this. Let's get the word out.
Yeah, we have your website plastered, your website plastered all over our website.
Awesome.
And you can have your staffers or yourself check us out. I suggested to your staffers to have you check us out before you came on the show because we can get a little silly on here. So you may not want to be affiliated with us, but it's too late now. Now you're going to Gitmo with the rest of us. So, but you can check our website out, Jill, at wakeupinmerica.com. That's M-E-R-I-C-A.com. Your staffers have that information. Cal had a question. He's had way more. It's supposed to go ping pong back and forth.
No. You're brown nosing. You're already set.
Please, my good sir, ask another question.
That's right. You need to convince a Catholic right now because the Muslim's already damn well convinced. We're supposed to be unbiased here. But
I couldn't help myself. She gave a very good answer to the floor policy.
No.
I am
just
sold.
Jump on the bandwagon. Go ahead. Okay, right. Jill, one of our listeners, Colleen, was actually posted pretty much the same question I was going to come at you with. Now, with you being part of the Green Party, and we actually kind of touched a little earlier about lobbyists, what is your plan to get rid of these parasites? Because, I mean, you probably don't have any being your Green Party. I know you guys are against all that and everything. But can you set forth a plan to get rid of these corporate lobbyists and Israeli lobbyists that are affecting our government
APAC.
System?
You mean
huh? Huh? What?
You mean APAC? Is that what you mean by Israeli?
I call.
You can't say Israeli. I mean, that's kind of prejudiced.
I call a pot a pot and a kettle a kettle.
It's called APAC. Let's be politically correct here, okay? Shall we?
It's from Israel. Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you argue that?
I absolutely do not argue that.
Okay, then a pot is a pot, a kettle is a kettle.
All right, let's have Jill answer the kettle or the pedal or whatever question.
Will you please get rid of corporate lobbyists? And how do you plan to get it past the Republican and Democratic Senate and Congress?
Okay, two very important questions. So lobbyists do two things. You know, one, they advise legislators. They say, here, pass this bill. You know, this is a great bill. We wrote this bill. You know, they sort of serve like staffers. In fact, more money is spent on lobbyists than the Congress spends supporting its staffers. Mm. So lobbyists become kind of like the advisors, which is outrageous because they have, you know, they have a vested interest they are serving, not the public interest. So they provide all this self-serving advice,
right,
and then they provide campaign contributions.
Yep.
And that's where their real power comes from, is that they are sort of the funnel for bringing money in, and that's how they buy their way into policy. So fortunately, there's a great solution for this, which is going to publicly funded elections.
Nice.
And there's a great solution for that, too, which means using the public airwaves for free for qualified candidates. Because the minute you do that, the costs of elections plummet. They go way, way down because most of the costs are all about buying big media.
Okay, I have to jump in right here.
By retaking...
That's brilliant, Jill. I'm sorry. I have to jump in on that. That is absolutely brilliant. I love that. I'm sorry. Now I'll back up.
Okay, great. I know. It's like these are well-kept secrets.
Like,
you know,
sense.
You guys got to get this out. It's, you know, it's by taking the public airwaves, which we own, which the president has enormous authority over because it is the Federal Communications Commission that writes these rules. So the president can certainly move that in the same way that we, the public, just, you know, force the FCC to stop privatizing the Internet. So this is our airwaves, and we have the right to say how they should be used. They should be used for our benefit, not the lobby's benefit. So we can make the cost of campaigns very small, and furthermore, we can get, you know, we can basically get the money out of elections so that lobbyists sort of, you know, become, they go away. They become absolutely irrelevant. They have no power. If they can't buy elections anymore, they have no power. And the minute elections are publicly funded,
they're useless. Let me ask you that, Jill.
So that's how we deal with them.
Well, let me ask you this, Jill, because this is my biggest concern for your campaign, and I'm sure this is something that you and your staff will work with, okay? But we look at Hillary.
I should be nicer.
But Hillary actually scares me to the core. That woman scares me. I think we're ready for a female president. We've been
just
ready for
the right
a female
one.
President. Just the right one. Not just anyone. The right one. And then we have old Bernie Sanders with the crazy hair and the he doesn't care what everybody thinks about him kind of attitude. Now Mr. Bernie.
Now, see, I kind of like that attitude.
Right, but he says a lot of the same stuff. But here's the thing that boggles me, Jill. He's a socialist, which I'm not too fond of, but he has a lot of the same ideas, mm-hmm. And he appeals to the younger crowd just as you do, okay? And he's also, you know, gaining huge amounts of money. I mean, in what, 1 week he got $15 million? And just a week or two, I think it was, he was able to get that. Now, he says that none of that came from corporations. It all came in maximum amounts of $250. My issue with Bernie is I absolutely hate his foreign policy and some of his socialist ideas for our domestic side of it. I absolutely am against those as well. My issue with Bernie is this, for you, and please tell me if you feel the same, and what you plan to do. So it's a two-part question there for you. My issue is that he's going to draw so much attention from the very core that you need.
Yep.
Okay? Because he's talking hip, though he's been in this game for so long. He's a part of the system that we need to change. Okay? For those of us in our 30s or 40s, we're wise enough to see this, but fortunately, our 20-year-olds may not be. So how do you contend with that? With the fundraising, but as well as, the loss of that core group that seems to be going to him. And also, I guess a third part question, sorry, just want to add one more. And do you not find that it's funny? Well, I'm sorry, ideas just come to the head. They just, you know, that's just, I shoot from the hip. That do you not find it funny that he has a pretty basic same message as you, but yet he's getting so much corporate media and you get hardly any?
I totally catch your drift here.
Thank you.
Let me say this. You know, corporate America was going to have some way to, you know, create a distraction here.
Mm-hmm. Please be,
you know, because left to their own devices, Hillary's campaign would be totally putting people to sleep. Mm-hmm. So this is a great thing for the Democratic Party. Otherwise, who, you know, who could, like, bear to even look or think about
so the, basically the Bernie's a B12 shot. So Bernie's
well, let me say this. Let me say this. I respect Bernie a lot, and our policies agree in many areas. You know, we both think that we need an economy that's working for everyday people and not just for millionaires and billionaires. However, you know, we do have some differences. Our campaign supports abolishing student debt. We think that education should be free, and that if we abolish debt for the bankers who caused this problem, you know, who crashed the economy, we should abolish the debt for the students who are the victims of a crashed economy, basically. Yeah. So that's where we're different in one place. We're different on Black Lives Matter. I think our campaign is much more involved in that movement to rein in police militarization and racism and violence in the streets. And I haven't heard Bernie kind of really take much of a position on that. We are different in supporting weapon systems. You know, we believe we need to green the economy. Bernie is a strong defender of the F-35, which has already cost $500 billion. It will cost another $700 billion, and it's a complete boondoggle. And then we're a little bit different on climate, although, you know, he has a very good position on climate. Our position is clearly that we are in a climate emergency. We need to declare a goal of 100% clean renewable energy by 2030. So those are differences, but in the scheme of things, we are so much more alike than the other candidate.
He's also up for continuing. In fact, he's also mentioned increasing the funding to Israel as well.
Absolutely, yes. And if I left out foreign policy, forgive me on that, because on foreign policy we are very different. Yes,
yeah.
Completely, and especially on dealing with the war crimes and human rights violations of Israel. You know, he's really totally looked the other direction. But here's another very big difference between us is that I will be here in the general election as the presumptive Green Party nominee at this point. I'm really the only fully declared candidate. So it's not me. It'll be someone else who has the same policies, because this is what the Green Party is about. So what I represent will be here in November. But Bernie is not going to be here in November, because Bernie will be eliminated by the very big guns and firepower of the Democratic Party. If he right now he's fine, you know, and the Democrats and the DNC promotes his emails and all that. You know, he's of service right now. But if he were to become a threat, it would be a real problem. And he is not the first person to lead a principled campaign inside the Democratic Party. You probably are not old enough to remember Jesse Jackson.
No, I remember. We are old enough. We are old enough.
All right, so there you are.
Yes, we are old enough.
Especially
he's been around since the 70s. Cal's been around since the 30s. So we.
Okay.
Excuse me. Just because I like the 30s doesn't mean I'm from there.
Predecessors. And when Jesse Jackson became a real threat, you know, what did they do to Jesse Jackson? They completely smeared him. They made him out to be an anti-Semite and an enemy of Israel. And the Democratic Party went after him and destroyed him. And what did he do? You know, he folded into the Democratic Party and left not a trace.
Yep.
Same thing for Al Sharpton and Dennis Kucinich, these very principled campaigns. They are taking place. Although Nader is a slightly different story, because Nader you know, Nader was helping to build the Green Party. So we get defeated too, but we don't get dissolved and disappeared by a party that's hostile to the vision.
Right.
So Nader ran with the Green Party. When we're defeated, we keep building from there. And our campaign is much stronger than we were in 2012 because we build. And this is why you need a base outside of the Democratic Party, because it will destroy you and disappear you while the party keeps moving further to the right. So at the end of the day, these very principled campaigns kind of provide a smokescreen. They may not mean to, but the end result is that the Democratic Party keeps marching to the right. That's why I think for people who have the big picture in heart and in mind here, what we really need to do is give each other courage, give each other strength, and you know, be therapists for each other if we need to, be political therapists and help people get up and walk away from their abusive relationship. In this case, a politically abusive relationship with the Democratic Party. You know, sometimes it just takes, like, the courage of your convictions to actually take a good hard look at what it's doing. It keeps marching to the right, and it creates a Hail Mary kind of campaign, you know, every 4 years to keep you distracted and to try to rein everybody in, keep them inside the Democratic Party. And then Bernie Sanders has already said he will endorse the Democratic Party candidate and work for them. And, you know, he will be the conduit to try to bring principled dissidents back into the party. So it's
Not only that, but
he
also bring
up
all that youth that he collects by being the hip one to Hillary. Because, I mean, we all know that's going to go to Hillary. But I have a quick question for you, Jim, because we have another guest. Dr. Kevin Barrett is on the line actually with us right now. And so I think it'd be great because if we go ahead, because he can only be on for another 20 minutes or so. So I just wanted to bring him on and I thought maybe we can all have a nice little chit chat before we go throughout the show. But I have a quick question for you, and Cal will get his chance. We're not going anywhere just yet. I want to thank you for staying with us longer than your staffers told us you would. Absolutely.
Yeah, and they are twisting my arm right now to tell me I have other appointments I'm supposed to be on. So
well, let me
I'm
ask you
reluctantly,
just
yes.
ask one more question then, okay? Cal and I have started a fund. It's called Move Israel to Chad, because we have another solution to solve the occupied territory situation. Now, we have sent people to Chad. Chad has been so quiet. They went over there. Mail was piled up on the front porch. Newspaper was there. Nobody's home. There's been no issues in Chad. So we thought it would be a good idea, since they always say the Muslims want to kill all of the Israelis. We surround them by Christians in the center of Africa. Right, it's not too far from Israel. And then they can have their own state, and they don't have to worry about the big bad Muslims that live all around them anymore.
And that website is www.helpisaandcalmoveisraeltochad.com.
That's right. So
make the desert bloom.
Make the desert bloom.
Not bloom. Bloom with an L.
So can we count on, once you become president, God willing, once you become president, we could count on your support in that?
Well, I'm not sure if that's consistent with my commitment to international law, which argues against massive displacement and ethnic cleansing
on
things like that might get in the way. But I'm definitely all for thinking transformative solutions. And how about we bring Chad to Israel and Palestine and
how
bring a real ecumenical, you know, worldview that sees us all. This is one, you know, at the end of the day, we are like one country on one planet, and we need to begin thinking of ourselves as one human family on one planet. And
I
think that's the way to go.
Well, Jill, listen, Cal and I would Cal's going to say something as well, but I would like to thank you from the bottom of my heart joining us today on our show today. You have been a wonderful guest. You are welcomed here anytime. You don't need to call and ask permission. Show up anytime. And I tell you, Cal and Jill and everybody else that's listening, I'm sold. I am going to work on the Muslim community.
You were sold before she came on.
Well, when she talked about Palestine, no, I told you there was still that one issue, the foreign policy and the military, our military aid.
I'm going to vote for Hitler just to piss you off.
Me. All right, fine. I just
you guys that totally was already... I'm sold on your show. So let's make this happen and spread the word, Jill2016.com, and let's totally make a world that works for all of us. Thank you so much. Oh, thank you for your wonderful you, program. Yes. And keep the faith. We'll be in touch. Likewise. Take
thank
care.
You. All right, bye-bye. All right, everybody, that was Dr. Jill Stein, Green Party candidate for 2016, and has my vote, Cal. I don't care.
Well, see, at this,
I do care. You should too. You should say yes.
Point,
right
you
now.
Know, now I'm just going to be spiteful and vote against you.
I bet you will. I bet you will. Yeah. We also have...
You kept cutting
me off. ...the venerable... Oh, no. You have playtime over here. We also have the venerable Dr. Kevin Barrett on the line with us today. We apologize.
Kevin!
It's been so late today.
Good to be back with you guys.
Yes. And
I like this. Let's move Israel to hanging chat. And let's hang Netanyahu in hanging chat.
Oh, I love
see?
Kevin. I love
see?
Him.
Everybody now, remembers the hanging Chad, you, but not Kevin. Chad.
Okay.
Hey, we have something to play for you, okay? Just hold on 1 second. Loki, want to cue that up for me, please?
Wait a minute. You're not going to
have it. What do you mean I have it? Cal
you're not
has
use
it.
Any words that the FCC wouldn't approve of, are you?
Well, we're not a part of the FCC, but we have something for you. So just be patient here, Cal.
Oh, sure. I didn't have that prompted. Thank you, jerk.
This is a tribute to you, my good sir.
Oh, you're just evil right now. So I'm not liking you today, Issa.
I know, but that's all right. You'll get over it. You'll get happy in the same pants you got mad in.
No, it's not there.
All right.
It's not. It's gone.
It can't be gone. Loki, work it out. So, Dr. Kevin Barrett is a PhD in Islamic studies. He writes for Veterans Today. He has his own show, Truth Jihad Radio, on American Freedom Radio, correct? That's what it's on.
No, that's been gone for a couple of years. It's now on No Lies Radio.
No Lies Radio. Thank you for correcting me there. He also is
people who kick a group when they're down after they've been malandered and slandered, maligned, and beat up, and you make your living by going after that group. You're just one sick. You're a human piece of shit. I don't really see any point in talking to a complete you, Tom. You're just a worthless bully piece of shit, making money by being a bigot, being a complete creep, picking on a group that's been grossly maligned over the past 10 years. I don't care whether I was a Muslim or not. I would tell you exactly the same thing. If you were running a show in Nazi Germany, talking about Jews drinking the blood of Christian babies, it'd be exactly the same thing that you're doing now. So you're a criminal against humanity, a piece of utter human scum. You are the lowest of the low. You are such a worthless, low-down scumbag and piece of that I don't have the slightest interest in ever talking to you again. Goodbye.
I'm just going to say, sir, Kevin, I don't get beeped that many times in a two-hour show.
Salute!
Props to you, sir. Props
salute
to you.
So what was that guy's name I was hating on? I mean, I can't even remember his name right now.
You speaking the truth. You, my good sir, said everything that was going through my mind. He was on my show, and what I wanted to say when I was on his show. You, sir. My good sir.
You did forget one thing.
Yes, you did.
Good day, sir.
Good day, sir. That's how you should have ended it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Sometimes my patience wears a little bit thin with these people. And that guy, though, he just rubbed me the wrong way. What an attitude.
2 minutes. I'm like, you have faced Sean Hannity for 30 minutes. This guy got you in two. But he's a jack-off. He really is. I got him on my show. I didn't think that this Islamophobe would ever come on our show. Cal and I have been trying to get Islamophobes, these bigots, to come on our show.
No, sir. I go for spreading the truth to people who will actually listen, not combating idiots that aren't going to get you anywhere. It's like beating your head against a brick wall.
Every now and then, I need to have the batteries charged, okay? So give me a break. We're having fun right
Loki,
now.
Loki, find him another show. Food.
So when you said this, the part that you missed because you hung up was what I said afterwards. They were going on and on, making all kinds of stupid jokes. and about you. And I finally interrupted. I said, look, he was a guest of mine. And for whatever reason, he felt the need to say exactly what was on my mind. I said, because to be honest with you, I think the same thing about bigots. Now, I choose to deal with it in a different way than him, but that's okay. That's my choice. He has his rights to say what he wants. We live in a country that gives him the right to say how he what he wants, when he wants. He just did me a favor and said exactly what I'm thinking about and what I will be thinking about the entire time I'm on this show about all of you. So I went ahead and fulfilled my word. I had to be on the show because I gave my word. If he came on to mine, I would go on to his. So I fulfilled my end of the bargain. Consequently, because of our benefit. Down
after, you know, they've been malandered and, you know, slandered, maligned, and beat up. And you make your living by going after that group. You know, you're just one sick. You're a human
I
piece
just
of
love the dude, man.
You know, yeah. I don't really see any point in talking to a complete Q, Tom. You know, you're
well, you
just
know,
a,
Kevin, we're
going to
chop that up.
Bully,
we're
going to
have sound
boxes.
Oh yeah, you're becoming a button.
Money by
you're becoming a button on our
bigot,
show, Kevin. Okay,
being
I guess yeah. Well, I've just given you the gift that keeps on giving.
That's right,
been
you do.
Grossly maligned over the past 10 years. I don't care.
Okay, and I'm going to tell you, Kevin. There's only one other of our guests that has become a button.
That's correct.
And that is Minar from Mint Press News.
That's right.
So
Minar.
This is a high honor for me to create a button for you.
Just for you. And actually, from that beautiful abundance gift that you gave us, he could create several buttons.
I
was under the impression these guys had some kind of mainstream show or something, right? Don't they have like a actual broadcast radio mm-hmm. show?
They do. They have mainstream shows. So
I was hoping that those F-bombs would get them in trouble with the FCC.
Well,
I guess it wasn't live.
Well, no, it wasn't live. They never filmed
it's a
live.
7-second
That's the reason
delay.
Why I recorded it live while we were on, and that's on our website. Because if you listen to what I recorded from us being on there to what they actually played, they chopped it up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, you can tell they're totally dishonest. I mean, they were muting the mic.
Yep.
Like, it's, you know, how can you have a conversation when they're doing that?
And they would not turn on the video, which is what they were supposed
to
do.
Retard,
they wanted our video on, but they
never go
full
retard.
So let's talk about you now that we've had our fun with that, and we've caught our listeners.
Oh, I'm not done having fun
with
that.
Oh, we're not done by far.
No,
we're not
no.
done with that by far.
I'm done.
Tom Trent, though, we're going to be spanking him for a while. But because of that, actually, I have a debate that I'm going to be on tomorrow night late with the likes of Anjum Chowdhury, which I'm going to be taking a lot of notes from your battles with that idiot. As well as Robert Spencer, as well, will be on there. So,
is this on your show?
No. This is on some other show. Somebody had saw the Tom Trento show, saw the whole thing, saw me, invited me to debate Anjum Chowdhury and Robert Spencer tomorrow night.
Well, that should be pretty good.
Yes, it will be. I've been looking forward to it. Cal and I have talked about Anjum many, many, many times on our show. Because he is a thorn
in
our side.
I lost track.
That he's lost track, I know. So, but anyway, so let's talk about you and what you have going on right now and what we can plug for you. I know that you're still writing for Veterans Today, some very great articles. If you guys are not reading that, you need to be. He's got some great articles out there. What else you got going on?
Well, I'm just about to leave on a book tour out west. I'm going to be plugging the Charlie Hebdo book, talking about false flags, especially false flags designed to whip up hatred of Muslims. The Charlie Hebdo event in Paris is the latest spectacular example of that. And I edited this book, We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, Free Thinkers Question the French 9/11. It's got 21 leading public intellectuals all questioning the Charlie Hebdo events. Probably about 15 or so say it was a false flag, and the other six maybe aren't so sure, looking at other aspects of it. So I'm going to be talking about this in Denver, Colorado, in Grass Valley, Sacramento, San Francisco, Berkeley, Santa Cruz, Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, and then four cities in Alberta, Canada. And in the middle of that, I fly over to Atlanta for a convention there to talk about it as well. So I'm going to be hawking my book and talking about false flags. The Charlie Hebdo thing was, to me, it was right up there with 9/11 in terms of being over-the-top annoying. Getting 5 million people into the streets to march in, you know, sympathy with hate mongers based on a false flag operation.
You know, it was really sick. So, but that, I'm really happy with his book. We got the book out in less than 3 months after Charlie Hebdo operation. Lots of leading figures in that book, you know, people like Paul Craig Roberts, the former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, Cynthia McKinney, the Green Party candidate I voted for in the 2008 elections, a long list of very, very well-known people. And it's also gotten endorsements from pretty high-level people like Richard Falk, the former UN Human Rights Rapporteur, and David Ray Griffin, the Dean of 9/11 Studies. So this is it's a breakthrough book on false flags, and it's something that Muslims need to get up to speed on. You know, the reason we have these idiots like this Trento guy just slandering us and preparing the way for us to be locked up in camps is because we're not doing anything about these horrible false flags that are used to misportray us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's everybody who looks into 9/11 honestly sees that this was obviously not 19 Muslims with box cutters. This was a very sophisticated military intelligence operation. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty obvious why it was done as well. Look at what's happened since. And now they just keep doing the same thing over and over with more and more of these false flags. It's all designed to grease the propaganda skids for people like this Trento. And, you know, we're all heading into a situation where if the economy gets really bad, God knows what could happen in this country.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so Muslims need to step up and do our duty, not just as Muslims defending the faith, but also as American citizens defending the Constitution. We've lost most of our Constitution over these things. And so this has been my big issue, of course, now for over a decade. Mm-hmm. But the Charlie Hebdo affair gave me the opportunity to put together this book that I think we basically undid the Charlie Hebdo false flag in real time.
I've got an idea. Anytime anybody does a false racial stereotype or saying of any kind, we're going to call it a Trento from now on.
any racist statements? Oh, they just committed a Trento.
You just pulled a Trento, man.
I cannot believe you said a Trento. How could you say a Trento? Oh,
we're going to make this. Here's what
I'd like you to do, so that we can get it on our website. Your tour spots for your book, so we can post it on our website, so that any of our listeners who might want to come buy a book get a signature or two of you. Plus, I hope I'm going to get my copy.
Yeah,
you certainly will. You should have come. I was in KC. I did a talk at the KC Mosque.
I know.
When you're around Southwest Michigan, let me know, and I will bring a bunch of people.
I will be happy to come to Southwest Michigan. That's within striking distance.
And yeah, it's probably not too far from food, him. Too. We like food. I'll bring you food. Good food.
Well, that sounds like a plan.
Hey, what I'd like to do is
we'll have you, if you can send it to me, if you'd like. Send your tour dates, your stops, where you're going to be. We'll post that on the site. Where people can buy your book at. I'm sure it's Amazon, but give me all the details. Just send it to me in a message.
He said submit to him. That was in there. It was a Freudian slip. He wants everybody to bow down to him, even us Catholics.
Hey! I warned you.
Okay, well, you know, in the meantime, I will send you that stuff, but people can go to the Truth Jihad website, truthjihad.com. Click on the blog link, and that will take you to the book tour. So if you just go to truthjihad.com, click on blog, and there you are. There's the book tour. It's all listed out, you know, when, where.
That's even easier.
And how to buy the book.
There we go. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to buy a book, Kevin, and I'm going to send it to you for an autograph, if you don't mind.
I could probably do that.
I appreciate that. So you've got the book tour coming up, and you're going to be going out west with this book tour. And the radio show is done. Or no, it's not done. You've moved it over. What days do you have your show on?
It broadcasts on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday on No Lies Radio. But subscribers to my radio show get it early. So more or less when I record and edit it, then I send it to the subscribers. And then a day or two later, it gets broadcast publicly and archived. And again, people, if they want to subscribe and get these shows right away, they just go to truthjihad.com and sign up.
There we go. Now, Kevin and I have worked on a few things in the past, and hopefully Kevin and I will be continuing to work on some other things with Cal and I. We are going to be revitalizing, Cal, the Million American March Against Fear.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, well, I was actually telling Kevin. No, you know, Cal. Because you're a part of it.
Okay. So you're revitalizing, are you talking about joining up with Minister Farrakhan for the thing?
No.
Justice or else? Because they're going to actually get a huge number of people to D.C. for 9/11 Truth in October.
They definitely will. Actually, I do have plans to go there, but I also want to do one in 2016 anniversary, 9/11, just like we did last time. But this time it's going to be a lot different, with the Cal and I and our success of our show. We've made some great contacts, as you've seen tonight, with Jill Stein as a guest, and we've had some great guests on here, particularly in the libertarian movement as well, in the activist community. We've had some great guests, so we have some great speakers who have great following to go with them. So this is going to be done the way we envisioned it the first time, but still having the same impact. So I'm hoping we can still play the same trick on the mainstream media that we were successful at doing last time.
Well, I hope it works. What I found, though, is that, you can outrage them and get them to drag you onto Fox once, but it's hard to get them to bring you back, especially if you do okay the first time you're on. But who knows? I mean, maybe we'll get the whole thing going again, especially maybe we should talk to those bikers and get the bikers to start.
And that's exactly actually what I'm doing with Barbie, who's actually an avid listener of ours as well, and who's one of the organizers of the biker rally last year, who's now no longer believing in that garbage from last year. She's a avid listener of ours now. But she keeps, she lives in both worlds, if you would. She lives in the real world, which is Muslims are not the enemy. And she still lives in the ignorant world of the Trentos. So I have a doorway to them to poke the bear, if you would, to drum up that. We will play all the tricks and all the dirty tricks we need to in order for us to get the message out there. Unfortunately.
Don't get me started on Fox News.
Well, it sounds like a plan.
Sounds like a plan. And I know you, of course, will be a part of it.
I'd be very much honored to be a part of it.
Yes, and you will be one of our speakers as well. And we're going to start putting this stuff together probably starting in August or September, actually. It'll give us plenty of time to do exactly what we did last time, hopefully. But bigger. Bigger and better this next time.
But we have to pray to Allah for cooler weather this time.
Yes, that would be definitely nice, because I got actually heat stroke that year.
Yeah,
I was so
too.
Sunburned, and I got heat stroked. It was sad. So, God willing, we'll have better weather this time. And it'll be a nice opportunity for us to get Jill Stein to come speak, because it'll be just before elections in D.C. So,
excellent.
Yes, so we're padding the way here. And this is us, and this is the thing, Cal, that you have been so instrumental in being my partner on this show, is that you've actually helped, people like myself and Kevin, both Muslims, be able to get out there, get our voices out there, and they don't actually hate us, because, you bring the funk.
That's right. The psychedelic funk.
Well, that's an indispensable ingredient on this show, is that funk.
It is.
I'm telling you. If anybody's going to get funked up, it's going to be you.
I know. He wanted to play that tonight for Jill Stein. I'm like,
yeah.
It's silly.
Kevin, you've seen a picture of Jill. I'm sorry. Please don't take this wrong, Jill, if you're still listening. But she does have that quintessential older yuppie white woman look to her. She's pale. So I thought, what better than to show all sides of her than punch the funk?
That's the last we will ever hear of Jill. That comment just made it so we will never hear from Jill again.
Yeah. You're not prejudiced against, like, soccer moms and older white women, are you, Cal?
Well, actually, hold on.
He chases strippers.
No, I am a little bit, because, well, being a single father of five, I had to have a minivan. So my friends used to like to make jokes of putting soccer mom stickers on my van.
Did you have a traumatized? Do you need to lay down and have a session with Dr. Kevin Barrett?
Do you have room on the couch? I mean, do you have a comfortable pillow on that couch?
Okay, guys, my wife is calling me right now.
That's right.
It's the exact moment of the iftar and the maghrib and all of that stuff.
Right.
And it's kind of sacred in our house. And so, as I told you, I do have to run now and go break the fast.
I was just getting ready to let you go and was going to tell you, may Allah accept your fasting. And thank you for joining the show tonight. You're always welcome on here.
Yes, please, anytime.
And we're going to have a nice
Thank you both. It's a great show. Thank you. It looks like you're getting better and better as you go along, too.
Yeah, I'm teaching Issa as we go.
Yeah. Well, you're doing well. You're shepherding him right along. He's almost starting to make sense. Hey, have a good one, you guys.
Thanks, Kevin.
See you later.
Oh, my goodness.
Wa alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Wa alaikum salam wa barakatuh.
Now, right. Are you even paying attention
to... Even my own best friend. Look at that. He's one of my best friends, and he's making fun of me, too. Look at this.
That's what we do. You know, are you even paying attention to our name changes here? Because, you know, you want to keep calling it a Million Muslim March against fear.
Who said that?
So we're changing it to a Million Muslim a Million Muslim and One Catholic and One Gay Guy March against fear.
I didn't say it was a Million Muslim March. What are you talking about? It's a Million American March against fear. It's going to be the same as last time, so that drums up the same rhetoric. Same height.
I still think it sounds better. A Million Muslim and One Catholic and One Gay Guy March against fear. It's longer, yes, but it's good, man. That would draw some attention. Wait a minute.
It would draw attention. I don't know. Million American March Against Fear. 2016, September 11th, 2016. We are marching. So, man, we had a great show tonight here.
I did.
We had two great guests on, right, Cal?
Yeah, you know, I'm still on the fence with Jill because you didn't let me ask my questions. So, you know, I'm closer. I'm leaning.
I got 7 to 10 million Muslims to pack behind her.
Right? Yeah, but you ain't got the power of the Catholic cow.
The Catholic cow or the Catholic cow?
You don't have my...
Did you say cow or cow?
Cal.
Okay, there's an L. Okay, all right, I'm just clarifying there. I almost said that. It's like the Catholic cow. I've never heard of that.
My listeners are still wanting to hear my questions answered by Jill. You know, I'm just going to say this.
My listeners.
You know, I keep hearing from our listeners that I need to speak more. Okay, and then when I do, you stifle me, man. You stifle me.
You know,
you
what?
Were brown nosing
with you on air.
We're finishing
the show. I'm debating this with you on the air.
Yes, you are. You were Huber snooching. You were Huber snooching. You already were decided, and you did not let an unbiased person ask questions.
I was not 100% sold. I told you.
Oh, you were too.
Foreign policy.
You were too.
If that woman would have said the same garbage that Bernie Sanders said, I would have been like, "That's it. I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm leaving the country. There's nobody worth voting for anymore." So, no, I was not decided yet.
All of you that were listening to the whole show, please voice your opinion. Was he not brown nosing?
Whatever. And?
And?
when she gave that brilliant answer about our foreign policy with Israel as well as our military aid, that was a brilliant answer. I was sold. So you'll forgive me if you know, I'm not a journalist,
I'm a commentator. I'm going to say every question she did answer, yes, I was impressed by. Okay? I will say that. But I didn't get to ask all the questions.
I didn't get to ask all mine either.
Okay,
we ran out of time, buddy.
Call her back.
Call her back.
Let's call her back.
Well, she said that she would love to come on our show again. Okay?
Add to call.
You can't call her again.
What do you mean I can't?
Well, you could.
I've got her number now.
Another interview.
Do you realize? Do you realize if she does get elected president, we now have her personal number?
That's right, we do.
Hey, we don't like what you're doing here.
We're like, hey, don't forget us little people here.
We're going to bring you back on the show again if you keep this up.
Oh, that's beautiful. All right. We're at that point where we need an idiot of the week since we had two great guests.
No, real quick, sorry, Loki. Give me one more second.
All right, do you realize
where our show has taken us? We now not only have the Pope's phone number, but a presidential candidate's
number. That's right. That's right. We sure do, and we should soon possibly have the mayor of London's phone number. George Galloway.
I see a Muslim and a Catholic becoming very influential.
Yeah, now very influential. Drink the Kool-Aid.
Thank you, Colleen.
Did you hear that? What Colleen just read?
Yep.
Yeah. Read out loud for the listeners to hear what they're saying in there. Come on, read it out
Colleen.
Loud.
Colleen says, "I think Issa was just very excited, not brown nosing, lol, but he does like to interrupt you."
That I do. Yes, that. And I worked very hard tonight to not do it as much, but I don't know. Anyways, so. What else you got, Cal, before we give the floor to Loki, the idiot of the week?
Nope,
you sure?
Give it to Loki. I'm
you
done.
Hey, how about this? How about you ask your question now? We present it to her via that, and she can respond to you with a ring-a-ding-ding phone call.
Okay.
How about that?
Okay. Sounds good.
So talk to her as if she's here.
Mrs. Jill Stein. Or
Hopeful
Jill Stein. Presidential Jill Stein. Either way, edit it up to where it sounds good for me, Loki. Please make me look good. Thanks. My question is...
too late.
My question is, and she comments on her website about getting rid of, or not getting rid of, oh, crap, see, now
I... Oh, look at you. Look at
you. Yeah, I was... I got
killing. Rid of it. Dead air. Dead
yeah,
air.
I know.
Dead
no,
air.
It's...
dead air. Dead air.
I want to...
Dead air. Dead air.
...be verbatim on this, so just... Okay. Please give me 1 second here. Bear with me.
Get air.
Empower the people. Abolish corporate personhood. Protect voters' rights by establishing a constitutional right to vote. Enact electoral reforms that break the big money stranglehold and create truly representative democracy. Public campaign financing, ranked choice voting, proportional representation, and open debates. Does this mean we're going to get rid of the lying representatives?
I believe so, because if she's talking, she did actually touch on that, actually, if you listen to the show,
she touched on all
of that.
Right, but she didn't actually state whether or not we could get rid of the representatives in this day and age.
Well, we can't. Where... Think about it. We talked about this before the show, Cal.
No, we still can.
Yes, but we also talked about this before the show. You remember what my example?
But I want to hear
was
yours.
That, I know you want her to answer, but can I answer?
No, I already know yours.
Okay, well, but our listeners don't.
They can talk to you later. It's Loki's turn.
Oh, wow. We got plenty of time for Loki.
You said,
15 minutes. He'll take 5 minutes.
Wait a minute. You
at the
said
most.
That I got to ask my question to Jill.
All right.
Fine,
you big baby. Go on, Loki.
I love busting your chops. It's great.
God. Somebody feed that man. Give him his bottle. Come on, Loki. Who's the idiot of the week?
Hurry up before he starts talking again.
Yeah, exactly. You two at Sandbox playing or something.
My toy! Mine! That's my toy!
Hey, now...
The idiot of the week is actually another police force. They went out of their way in the wrong way. So let's jump right into it. Cop tases girl who is having a seizure... and arrest mom who was trying to help.
Yay!
A lawsuit against the police department details police brutality that is nothing short of mind-boggling. The police chief from the Rainbow City Police Department Rainbow City Police Department.
Yeah, you've never heard of Rainbow City?
Is that, yeah.
And
is
it's
that,
not a gay community. Don't go there.
It's not a gay community. Along with others in the town or city of Gadsden, are accused of tasing a little girl who was having a seizure and then arrested the mother when she tried to help. The lawsuit states that the girl was at a concert when she started to have a seizure because a band member came off of the stage and created a stampede in the crowd. The sister of the girl that was having the seizure went to event staff and told them what was happening. The event staff proceeded to carry the little girl to the lobby and drop her on the ground, where law enforcement of the Rainbow City Police Department showed up, held the girl to the ground, and proceeded to tase her 3 times. Yes, Cal.
I know what he was thinking. I got this. I don't think so much as the idiot of the week. I really don't. Okay, because there's an old saying, you fight fire with fire. Well, you see somebody convulsing, you hit them with something that would make them convulse, and it's like a, to, you know, the the fire with fire. You know, she stopped convulsing. He was trying to help.
You're talking about algebra, negative, and a negative makes a positive?
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
I can see the logic.
Yeah. You know, fire with fire, and she's convulsing.
He may have been trying to help, but why did they detain
him? Don't tase me, bro!
And then tase her as well. But they did take the young girl of 13 to the hospital to figure out why she had the grand mal seizure. But while at the hospital, were making snide comments and jokes that the girl needed to be admitted or committed to the mental health unit.
The taser uses compressed gas to fire two small darts attached to copper wires. When they pierce the skin, the electric current flows through the body, seizing up the muscles and sending the suspect crashing to the ground, screaming in pain.
Oh, that's just wrong, Cal. Wrong.
I'm sorry. I had to.
So we're going to see where this
lawsuit... Oh, I'm going to hell.
yes, you are.
Please, God, forgive me, but damn, that was funny.
That all complaints can be sent to Cal, Common Cal, at wakeupinamerica.com. Issa was not a part of that.
I still don't have the password to that email, so they're just piling up. I haven't seen them yet.
I was not a part of that actual joke.
Okay, fine.
Question is, do police use the taser properly?
Well, that's the million-dollar question.
Is that better? Is that better?
That is better.
Oh, sorry, I was breaking my fast, but yes, that was better.
I'm going to Akash is going to beat me up for that one.
Yeah, that was wrong on so many levels, but it was funny, I have to admit. I actually had to mute my mic. I laughed so hard. And it's a good thing I wasn't drinking water when you done that, because
another shorted computer.
Yeah, there would have been another tase. I would have been tased by my computer at that point. So who's the genius again, Loki, behind the tasing incident?
The Rainbow City Police Department.
No, which one of the rainbow flag flying cops did this?
They
give a name?
They do give a name.
And?
I am looking for it here.
Wow, you're really slacking on your job there, buddy. I'm serious. You got one job on this show. While we're live, you have one job.
I know. It does not actually give the name of the...
How can it not give the name of the officer? That's shoddy journalistic work right there, because that could be a big story.
But it does give the police chief's name, who is also named in the lawsuit, and his name is Greg Keller.
I want to know who the taser is. Who the guy that did the tasing? That's what I want to know. That's shoddy journalistic work right there, Loki. I have to say that by far, I mean, I'm very disappointed in you tonight.
Don't tase me, bro!
I'm very disappointed in you, your journalistic skills, because I would venture a guess that whoever it is that did the tasing of the 13-year-old girl is sitting at home right now flipping through the channels on paid leave.
You know what? That just makes me want to say,
you suck!
Well,
that just took the funny away, Issa.
I'm gonna kill the dead air, and maybe while I do that, you may try to redeem yourself and find that guy's name, Loki, because I think that name needs to be put out there, don't you?
I do too.
So that if we bump into him in a grocery store somewhere, we might want to smack him with something or tase him ourselves.
Yeah, find his Facebook page. Let's plaster him.
Oh yes, I like that. I like that idea.
Taser expert. Blah blah blah.
Also. So also we still need that those little girls down in Texas, but I guess that plan fell through.
Yeah,
we have all these great ideas. Sometimes Loki just, we bombard our producer with so much stuff. Sometimes he just cannot keep up. You know, we really do. He earns the money.
Colleen beat you to the answer, Loki. Lawsuit lists Rainbow City Police Chief Greg Carroll, officers George Morris.
Look at that.
James Frazakis and Justin Gilliland and two unnamed officers. Hey, get those names.
Yeah, well, that's half. That's half more than Loki got. Maybe we should think about hiring Colleen. Maybe we should have an owner's conversation after the show. You know, maybe it's time to upgrade our producer here. You know, get a little upgrade. You know what I'm saying?
How are you going to do better? How are you going to do better than an indentured servant? I mean, really.
This is true.
If you want this better, you're going to have to pay.
Yes, this is true.
And you're cheap.
He is a good whipping boy.
Yes.
He does take a whipping good. although his feelings did get hurt the other day.
What they're not telling you, though, is as their producer, I have all the keys to lock them out of their own show.
Oh,
and we have his address where we can find him because we got money to fly there. How you like that?
Hey, have you seen the ending of Jay and Silent Bob? You know where they're flying back and forth? We can do that.
We can do that. You see that? Yeah, we know where you live, Loki. So don't forget that.
I will disable your truck permanently, sir.
Look at that. So. Oh, look, you got Barbie to the rescue. She's defending you. Well, I will tell you this, that Loki's feelings got hurt the other day. It was a misunderstanding.
Not by me.
See, he doesn't realize. I want to clear this on the air, Loki, because I already talked to you one-on-one.
But I reiterate.
Clear this on the
not
air,
by me.
Okay? All right? So Loki's feelings were a little hurt the other day because I tend to be, I'm sorry, and I know this, and it's a character flaw that I am working on, but I tend to be a little demanding. I like things
a
when
little,
I like them, but at the same
a just little, little. No. Just a, no.
Just a little.
No.
Just a little.
No.
Just a tiny bit.
No.
All right?
Yeah, but like Texas is a small state.
That's still little compared to the world.
No, right? Not really. So, you can fit countries inside of the state.
A little demanding. So, with that, though, I also understand that things don't happen overnight. And I know this. But typically, stop it, Barbie.
See?
Typically,
I love you, Barbie.
Right? Typically, all right. typically, when I ask for things, I ask for them in very short manners. So they're not long, drawn outs. Could you? Would you? Would you? Please. They're kind of like, hey, I need this. All right. Not because I think, Loki. Now listen to me. Not because I think that you can do it simply by rubbing a lantern, making a wish. You know. Rubbing chicken bones together, whatever, okay? But it is a short, quick request simply because I am busy talking to you in between patients or in between phone calls or in between, you know, job things,
hey,
okay?
Are you noticing the man that has patience has no patience?
So it's not that I'm being impatient. It's not that I am demanding that you do it right then and there. It is simply
Loki.
The thought pops into my head, and if I don't say something now, I will forget.
Loki, get his mom on the phone. She needs to reteach him manners.
So, as I was saying, Loki's feelings was a little hurt because he thought that I meant that when I asked him for something, that I was asking for it now. And I obviously have patience because the video I've already paid him to, you know, what's the word? Chop up and
edit.
You know, edit. Thank you. That's the word. That I already paid him 2 months ago for is still not done.
Loki, think of it this way.
Right.
What would he be without us? Dead.
I would still be on FBI's Most Wanted.
You would be dead by now.
and I would have death threats by Barbie's biker friends.
Whoa. Oh, so, Barbie has Issa's mom's phone number. You need to give that to us, Barbie. We're going to call her.
She does not. And no, you're not calling my mother. So what'd you say, Loki? Moving on?
Well, I just figured is... as albino as you are, you would not have a hard time hiding.
I like that one.
See, that's how you know his feelings weren't really hurt. That he was just having an emotional moment when he complained to me.
Well, you can cause that in people, Issa. I have to admit.
That's right, I can. But it's all in good fun. So, anyways, that's Loki's sad story for the week. We won't be hearing about that again because I've already clarified that I'm in queue. I'm in queue for what?
I'm sorry.
The taser uses compressed gas to fire two small darts attached to copper wires. When they pierce the skin, the electric current flows through the body, seizing up the muscles and sending the suspect crashing to the ground, screaming in pain.
I think Barbie's in queue because Barbie wants something to say. We'll let her have 30 seconds.
All right.
Oh, you're so generous.
I know. Well, we're getting to the point where we got to end the show, you know?
We don't have to.
We don't have to, except for the fact we've been fasting for 16 hours.
Issa.
Okay, do you know how much I can say in 30 seconds?
I know. That's
go, right. Girl, go!
On the south side of New York. I can talk really fast, even faster than Issa if I need to.
Well, let's see it. Tick, 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 tick,
tick. Oh, no, Issa, I can talk over an hour, too. And I have had a conversation with your mother, Issa, if you remember last year.
No, I don't remember this.
When she told me about your grandmother?
I remember this now. So, you cannot contact. Please don't contact her. She don't need to get in.
Now you know who to call, Cal.
Stop it.
Oh, I know who to call.
Ghostbusters.
No.
Ghostbusters.
No. She's called your butt buster.
That would be my mom. That's right. Oh, that's a good one there. Well, we've gotten to that end of the show. We should be playing our outro music at this particular moment.
Not exactly.
Barbie, did you get to listen to everybody tonight? What'd you do, mute Barbie?
I didn't get to listen to everybody. I didn't. I'm sorry.
You didn't get to hear Jill Stein?
No, I caught the end of her.
Ah, well, you'll have to catch the archive. Loki will take his sweet time getting that up on the website, I'm sure. Because he's too busy being blinded by my albinoness.
You're crazy.
He's too busy being blinded by my albinoness. So, I want to... Hey, listen, seriously.
You should be lucky you have such a good producer.
Oh, Loki does a great job. I told him that he's an invaluable asset to our team. I just told him that today, randomly, out of the blue.
Good day, sir!
That's what I told him at the end of it. Anyway, so, listen, thanks for our guest, Jill Stein. Dr. Jill Stein coming on here tonight. I was very excited to have her on here. Very glad she came on here. Dr. Kevin Barrett also was our guest tonight.
I'm
gonna get to talk so hard on Kevin. Shindo, you know, your little Irish jig you got going on there. Anyway, so I will just talk louder and say to everybody a good night, and to all a good night, and thank you for listening.
I take it Issa just can't handle being overshadowed by anything. You know, because realistically, I don't know. We'll leave it to the listeners. Well, if our outro's too loud over Issa, sound off. I'm not going to listen either way because I like the outro more than I like Issa. Oh, yeah, I know. Yes, thank you, Jill Stein, for coming on, and Dr. Kevin Barrett. You know, between all of this, I'm going to put now, from now on, I want to be called Dr. Common Cal. Just so I can fit in. I feel left out here.
You should, my good sir. You should. Hey, Barbie, thanks for calling in there. Robert also as well. All our listeners chatting with us on our website. Don't forget, next Tuesday, catch us. I think we're going to have the Zen Gardener with us next week. Not quite sure. I'm hoping we can get the Zen Gardener with us next week. We got the briefly messed with him a couple of weeks ago, and he looks like great fun. So we're gonna test him out come this next week. I think if Loki can actually ever actually get us a guest, that I don't have to do the work for him. So and then
90 seconds,
and then hopefully we'll get some of Cal's guests who are still somewhere.
Thank you all for listening. We love you all, and good night.
Cal, I love you too. I love you too.
I love you, Issa.
I know you do, buddy. I know you do. And Loki, you're all right with me. Got a thumbs up. Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Thanks.
Six, 60 seconds.
60 seconds? Oh my goodness, I thought we were closer than that. Oh, so anyway, so...
Thank you for using Black Talk Radio.